This is Dean Kuntz, and welcome to my podcast. I thought today I'd talk a little bit about some film experiences I've had, because every writer almost has them sooner or later. And there's things we all complain about, because we're all brutalized by Hollywood in the same ways. But then there's some things that happen that are a little different. And I had a film made of a book called Hideaway, which became one of the worst experiences of my life. In fact, when the movie came out, I was doing a TV show that Greg Kinnear had at that time before he gave it up to become an actor, and a good one. And on the show, he asked me, oh, there's a film of Hideaway being released. Do you recommend people go to see it? And I said, well, if you want some fun and your two choices are going to see this movie or nailing your hand to the wall, I recommend you nail your hand to the wall. It will be a great deal more fun than the movie. They didn't want me promoting the film thereafter. But what they had done to the movie was horrendous. The key character that the entire book is built around is a 10-year-old disabled girl. She has a deformed leg and a deformed hand, and she's an absolutely courageous, wonderful, funny, delightful character. And although she's not the main character, she is the character that everything circles around, because the book is about the destruction of innocence and how true evil usually focuses itself on the innocent. And this is a very little girl is a very innocent girl, and the villain of the piece is drawn toward destroying her more than anyone else. So as the film developed, it first had a terrible screenplay, but then it had a different screenplay that was quite wonderful. But as it came toward casting, they suddenly called me up and said, we're very thrilled to tell you that the role of Regina, we're expanding it a little bit to make her pretty close to the lead of the movie. This is a young actress. She's going to be the biggest thing in film ever. She's going to be the biggest actress since Monroe. It's Alicia Silverstone. Well, first of all, Alicia Silverstone was not a 10-year-old disabled girl. She was a teenager, but of course they changed the role to a sort of teenage sexpot who was fighting with her parents and no longer a particularly innocent character, and the whole story completely collapses right there at that moment. You may also have noted that, no offense, but Alicia Silverstone has not become the biggest star since Marilyn Monroe. They also told me we have a new young director who's going to be the next Steven Spielberg. Well, I'd had enough films made and heard often enough that the director they were assigning me was a young new director going to be the next Spielberg that when I heard it again, I cringed. I won't give you his name because I won't give him the benefit of that, but I don't know for sure that he actually works in films anymore. They went on to make a film that was the film that I had said, better nail your hand to a wall than go see it. And this had happened to me before. There was a film made of Watchers, and the lead character was a 35-year-old ex-Delta Force man who's burnt out, who in the opening chapter is thinking about killing himself, and then runs into this wonderful dog, this golden retriever, that actually is an animal that has escaped from a genetic engineering lab where they've been running experiments in enhanced intelligence, and the dog has the intelligence of a human being. And they transform one another, and this dog transforms many people's lives during the course of the novel. When the movie was cast, they changed the role so it was a teenage boy, because they said, we're going to give this to somebody who's building up to be the next biggest actor, the next Harrison Ford, and that was Corey Haim. So I'd had this experience more than once. And going back to Hideaway, they actually told me, sitting in a meeting where I was arguing against the Alicia Silverstone casting and the changing of that, they actually sat in a meeting and said to me, we can't let her be a little disabled girl. Nobody will be able to identify with a disabled girl. And I was so appalled, I sat staring at them and couldn't believe what I had heard. And I said, well, I think everybody will be pulling for her. She's a courageous, funny, your sympathies will be with her from the beginning. And the head of development for the studio said, oh, no, people will be very put off by a disabled person. So when you're dealing with things like that, you despair and want to not do films anymore at all. But then once in a while, something very good happens to you. And I wrote the screenplay for Phantoms based on a novel of mine. And the movie didn't turn out like I would have hoped, but it had a number of good things in it. And it's a collaborative medium, so you have to hope that everybody who's in it, from the director to the head of the studio understands what the film is supposed to be, and that wasn't the case with Phantoms. Some things still got right, and some of the casting was wonderful. Peter O'Toole was hired as a key figure in it. And because the director didn't want to talk to actors particularly, he was more of a shooter, the actors were coming to me to ask me about lines, could we change that line, ask me about character motivation. And I was used to the actors trying to avoid doing things that they thought were going to be difficult or that they thought would be difficult because another actor in the scene might be better than them. They never would say that, but there was a wonderful woman in this, Joanna Going, whose career had been largely in soap operas, but was breaking out into film, had been in a film with Kevin Costner, and was so wonderful that I know a number of people were uneasy about doing difficult scenes with her because she would do them so effortlessly. And so I had a lot of difficult conversations with actors saying, no, you can do it, and encouraging them and giving them reasons to think they could work around a very difficult scene. And then one day Peter O'Toole called, and he said, do you have your script there? And I said, yes. He said, well, turn to page 14. And so I did, and he read all the parts on 14 and 15, read everybody's dialogue. Then he said, let's go forward to page 20. And so I did, and he read page 20, 21, 22, 23. He was in this scene, but he was reading everybody's dialogue. Then he said, let's go forward to page 34. And so we did, and he read two or three pages to me. He said, let's go forward to page 50. I said, Peter, wait a minute. I know I'm stupid. I'm not getting it. There's something inconsistent in your character that I'm supposed to be able to hear, but I'm not hearing it. And you're going to have to just put it out in baby language for me and tell me what you need done. And he said, oh, no, no, dear boy, I just want you to hear this dialogue. It's wonderful, and I want you to hear it read well. And I said, oh, so all right. And he proceeded then to spend about a total of 30 minutes on the phone with me, long distance from London, reading me everybody's part in the scenes he was in. And I thought it was the kindest, most gentlemanly thing, which you don't find in the film world very often. And my every experience with Peter was exactly the same way. When it came to shooting the film and the cutting of the film, and I began to realize how many actors were massaging their dialogue as the scenes were shot, I realized what Peter had done. He had known that I was never going to hear the dialogue exactly as it had been written, and he wanted me to hear it exactly as it had been written and well read. And in every scene that Peter was in, he stopped shooting when people started massaging their dialogue too much and said, no, we have to go back. The dialogue is very good. Let's read it as it is. But in the scenes without Peter, were often a different story. So if there was a Peter O'Toole in every movie, it would have been a great deal of fun making a lot more movies than I have. The Husband is going to be a film also, and this time I think a very good one because the rights have been sold to Focus Features together with Random House Films, and Focus Features has a long history of very high-quality films, and thus far all my relations with them have been on a much higher plane. So I hope someday you'll be going to a theater and walking out with a happy experience of a Dean Koontz book. If you want to know more about my books, why don't you visit the website, deankoontz.com, and thank you very much.